Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed, you know, the kind of thing. So a while ago, I did a series of books where I made sure I'd read and reviewed all of the books which had won both a Hugo Award and a Nebula Award. I called it the Hugula series, and I concentrated only on novels which had won both Hugula novels, and quite a few people enjoyed that series. I think it was a success in some ways, not a success in the other ways. But there was this one book that came up and said, hey, will you review this book? And I said, no, this book didn't win. It is not a novel Hugula. But they said, but this book, as a novella, was a Hugula Award winner. And then it was expanded out into a novel which was nominated for both but didn't win either. And I said, what is this book? Nancy Kress, Beggars in Spain. And yes, of course, lots and lots of novels and books and general, you know, stories start off as a short story and then are expanded out into a longer book or into a, like, with a wider scope. Things like Flowers for Algernon, I know that was started off as a short story and then was expanded. And I think, you know, if we're talking about Huguelas, I think Dream Snake was too, and quite a few other books became like fix-up novels. So like there was a short story and then another three short stories written, and they all combined together into one novel, and that was this. And I said, well, which one should I read? You know, should I read the original novella, which is actually the Hugula Award winning story, or should I read the expanded version? They said, well, why not both? And I was like, okay, well, which one? So I decided to go with the novel, because I normally do read novels rather than novellas, and there's generally a lot more in these things to review. And so I went onto Audible, and there it was, of course, Beggars in Spain, written by Nancy Kress, narrated by Cassandra Campbell, who I only recognize that name from, I know she also narrated part of Cloud Atlas. So I know Cassandra Campbell, maybe some other books, but you know, I recognize the name. I was like, okay, let's just go with it. So Beggars in Spain, the whole setup, like the general setup, is that in the future, some people will be genetically engineered that when they grow up, or when, you know, when they're born, they don't need sleep. And you're like, okay, don't need sleep. Well, what's that? So, how is that going to affect them, and how is that going to affect the world? And that's what this book really deals with. There's two groups of people throughout this book. One called the sleepless, and the others the sleepers. So the sleepers are the normal humans, and the sleepless are the genetically modified humans. And it starts off, there's only 20 of them, but as it goes on, lots more people start, you know, genetically engineering their children to be able to non-sleep. So I'll back up a bit. I started reading this book a few weeks ago, and the world of the book is actually not that interesting, but it's quite an interesting reading experience. Because this was written back in 1991, or 1990, it won the, let's have a quick look here on Goodreads, it won the Hugo Award for Best Novella in 92, and 1991 Nebula Award. That's the novella, and then it was made into a novel, I guess, in 1994, because then it won the Prometheus Hall of Fame Award nominee. Was a nominee there in 94. So this book written in 94, so it's actually the future from where 94 is. And one of the big things that comes up is that there's like this network, and people connect, all the sleepers connect to a network, and it's like a dark net, as we call it now. So like, it's not part of the internet, and they are talking to each other. It's an encrypted, so only they can get into it, and that's how they're organizing their society, or organizing themselves as a persecuted group, because that's what happens later on in the novel. But the funny thing is that they use different nouns to do this thing. They don't get on their computers and use the internet. They use a modem, and it says, oh, well, this person was too young to use a modem, so they weren't connected yet. And this person wasn't able to use a modem, so they didn't use it. And it's quite a funny thing that all you need to do is change modem to computer or smartphone or tablet or laptop or anything like that, and it would actually work in the modern world. There's the other big invention which comes up is the idea of the Y energy. It's kind of like cold fusion, invented by someone called, I'm going to look on Wikipedia, Kenzo Yagai. And Kenzo Yagai didn't only invent cold fusion, he kind of started, he founded this movement which is a moral worldview, Yagaiism, which Kress based on objectivism, in which dignity is solely the product of what a person can achieve through his or her own efforts, and the contract is the basis of society. So yes, based on objectivism, and you kind of get that very, it's a very libertarian kind of book. So, but the cold fusion thing, it does seem to be a bit of a I've noticed that before. It's a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card for objectivists and libertarians. They say, oh, we want a world where everyone is equal, and so it only takes individual effort to be able to get your place in life. If everyone just put in effort, they'd be able to do it. And how is that possible? Well, it's not possible in the real world because there's just not enough resources, you know, and resource allocation is really wonky, and of course the rich are going to get richer, as we see, and the people in charge are going to, you know, hold them, you know, stay in charge by rigging the game to make the... But here you go. Oh, cold fusion, suddenly everyone is equal, and so now, yay, and that's great. And you're like, really? Is that the way it's going to work? But so that's the basis of this, is that we don't have to worry about where the energy comes from. It does definitely remind me of... there's some other books. Exactly, you know, kind of like the Atlas Shrugged as well. It was just like, oh, we're just going to invent a new technology. Why? Well, but just because it's handy for my worldview to take place. And I must admit that this book really did annoy me in a comparable way to Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, mainly because it's the same thing again. It's just like they're this persecuted group of sleepers, and they're like, oh, woe is me, the sleepers. Oh, no, not the persecuted group. The sleepless are a minority, and it's like, oh, no, but we're doing this thing. Oh, this sleepless person just happens to be the most successful software engineer in the world. He's like Bill Gates. He's just now really, really rich, and this other one is just happens to be rich. And you think, well, is it because of their own efforts? It's no, because the only people who could become sleepless are the ones who had parents who were rich enough to have them genetic modifications done in the first place, and then they just use that position of privilege to go on in the world and become more privileged and invent things. And you're just like, okay, is that really the only thing? And this is the thing that annoyed me most, is that I thought this book was going to be about what effect would it have on people to not have to, like, to not be able to sleep or not need sleep. And there's a tiny bit of that at the start of the book. It says, oh, well, the parents, it's really difficult for the parents, because the parents would say, oh, no sleep, that's great, and they can learn a lot of stuff when they would normally be sleeping, and they could do a lot more stuff. But it's like, oh, yes, but childcare is difficult, isn't it? Yes, childcare is difficult because the kid is always, always awake, which means at all times one of the parents has to be awake, and it's only rich people who can afford a maid who can deal with the child and actually get through with the child. And you're like, oh, okay, so the main thing that's holding people back is you know, the wealth of the parents and how well they can provide for the kids. And time and time again at the beginning, it's like, oh, and this kid was doing well, but because the parents weren't ready to be looking after a kid 24 hours a day, and they couldn't afford a nurse or an au pair or whatever, whoever it would be who looked after it, they just resented their kid and ended up abusing them. And you're like, okay, that might happen once, but then that suddenly becomes the default position of any not rich parent is abuse. And you're like, okay, so the differentiating thing between abuse, but then at the same time the main character has got a massively abusive father, but not to her because she's sleepless. There's these two characters, these twins. One of them is a sleepless twin and one of them isn't a sleepless twin. And you think, well, that would be really interesting, but it's not. It's just like one of them is considered the worthy daughter, the fake one, the sleepless one, the genetically modified one. For the father is the special one, and the other one is just abused as well. She say, oh, so abuse against sleepless people, that's fine, but abuse against sleeper people, the sleepers, but not against the sleepless. So, and then there's this bit where, like, there's all these kids get around and it's like, oh, we've never slept before, let's all take this drug so it makes us sleep. And then it's just skipped over and you're like, wait a second, wasn't that going to be the one of the most, like, formative things in their life, that they were going to sleep then? Nope, just skip over that. And I was thinking, where is the exploration of what happens if you don't sleep? And I was thinking, well, like, what about if you get drunk? Like, everyone gets drunk and you think, well, I normally sleep off my hangover. And when you're hungover, well, you sleep a lot and then you wake up and you're hungover. But just imagine always having to go through every single step along the way of, now I am drunk and now I am not drunk. And as you come down through and realize what you were doing before was stupid. But none of that's explored at all. It turns out the main benefit of not sleeping, actually there's two main benefits. The main benefit of not sleeping is just being, like, way more intelligent. And you're like, well, how does that work? Well, it turns out if you've got a lot more time on your hands, instead of spending that time 8 hours a day sleeping, you can spend it studying. And all of the Sleepless just seem to do that, and it all turns out in exactly the same way. And I'm like, you know, the reason why people aren't massively more intelligent, it's not because they have to sleep and that takes away from studying time. If people wanted to spend that much time studying, they could just spend that much time studying. And it's called, you know, that's what you do with lots of these kids. It's called hot housing, isn't it? Where you get your kid and you're like, oh, my kid's going to be the most intelligent person ever. And, you know, all these child prodigies that do this kind of stuff. And it turns out you can cram all that stuff into a child, but there's no indication that that actually leads to longer term success. Once they get to a certain point, once they get to the limits of their intelligence, it plateaus out. And everyone else then just catches up. And it turns out in their adult life, a lot of these they're not actually any more special. All the kids who get really good at chess when they're younger don't turn out to be chess masters, like the best chess players in the world. It's like the tortoise and the hare kind of stuff. The tortoise sometimes gets there first. And in the end point is the same point. So it seems like for this objectivist worldview of Nancy Kress, or the one that's being presented in the novel as good in Beggars in Spain, it's just this, not having to sleep is just this automatic pass into being the perfect libertarian Superman. And I'm just like, that does not interest me at all. That is it. You go Sleepless. What's the defining characteristic of the Sleepless? It's they are the objectivist libertarian supermen who just don't give a shit about other people, are against charity, are against... although that's not a libertarian thing, but in this book, it's like, oh, even being charitable is seen as a character flaw. You shouldn't even be charitable. You should just... It's not even worth it. Your own benefits and your own happiness and your own work and your own skill, that's the most important thing. And it annoys me no end. It did annoy me no end in Atlas Shrugged, where it's like, okay, these people over here, these are special. These are the Ubermensch. These are the supermen who are going to be the drivers of the economy and the inventors and the workers. You know, the people who are actually putting in their work and the people with dignity because they're really working for it, and they're going to disappear. What makes those special? Well, it's actually, you know, that it is their character that makes them special. It is what they think and what they do that makes them special. And what we have here in Beggars in Spain is it just steps back again and says, actually, it's the genetically modified gene, and it could have been anything. It didn't have to be them sleeping. It could have just been these people have got a genetic modification to make them into more intelligent, higher achievers. Because that's the only benefit of the Sleepless. The whole idea of, like, this is a book about people who don't sleep is a lie. It really is a book about an extra race of people who are better technologically, better economically, just better researchers, better everything, better at developing stuff, and they all band together because they're persecuted. They all band together, and they've got like this fake thing that brings them all together. Well, it's not fake thing. I mean, it's like this. It's they are modified in some way to make them into a minority, a persecuted minority. And I was thinking, am I meant to be feeling sorry for these people? Because these people are these, you know, born into privilege, have better genes than anyone else, higher achievers, and then they're being worried about being persecuted, and they go away, and they've got their little haven. What's it, the Grove or something? Galt's Grove? I don't know. I can't remember the in Atlas Shrugged, because I didn't even finish that book. So, yeah, they go away to this place called Sanctuary, that they buy up this land and go to a place called Sanctuary, and they're setting up their own sanctuary in Sanctuary. And, like, well, is this the only thing that intelligent high achievers can do, is that they take the benefits of the wider world and they sell there and they get the money from there, but then they just want to, you know, take their toys and into their own pram and go away? Hey, Juliana's home. And so that's one thing that I found very, very annoying. And then it gets even worse. It just so happens that a beneficial side effect of not having to sleep is that you live a long time. You know, they open that one of the sleepers dies and they open it up, and it's like his liver hasn't got any damage and his kidneys are all great. There's no wear and tear. It turns out that it's not resting. When you go and rest, isn't the thing that stops you growing old. It's actually rest that makes you grow old. And you're like, okay, that is totally counter to what I would have imagined. You know, it's not even the cool Blade Runner thing where it's like, yes, the candle that burns brighter burns shorter amount of time. It's not even that. It's like, yes, you're burning the candle at both ends and the candle is infinitely long, and you've just got, there's just no way to know how long you're going to live. But everyone's going to live a lot longer. And you're like, well, isn't that convenient? You know, and suddenly there's another thing which is a massive great benefit, but there seems to be no awareness by the main character of her privilege, of how her name is Leisha Camden, born in 2008, the 21st human being to have a gene mod for sleeplessness. Yeah, and it's just this free pass into libertarian objectivism, Yagaism, superhumanness. And you're just like, that is so unsatisfying to me. If this book was written again from the point of view of the twin of Alice, there's Alice and Leisha. If it was written from the point of view of Alice, who didn't have the sleep, her story is way more interesting, but it's all told from the point of view of one of the most boring characters I've ever read. So at least what's going on in this first part of this novel is slightly interesting. And I was getting through it, but there's just nothing there. It's a lot of like, okay, we've got this cabal of young children who are just massively special, and isn't it hard to be massively special? And I'm like, no, it isn't. Why are we reading about that? Why don't we read about the people who have got something to lose, or the people who are actually fighting adversity? If your adversity is, oh, I'm the best person in the world, and I'm the greatest in my... I qualified at university in the top of my class, but not just in the top of my class, actually. There was three other people, but they were sleepless as well. And so I was fourth in my class, and all the sleepers are coming in. It's like, we're all the best people in the world, isn't it? And their persecution is, some poor people might want us to look after them. Some poor people are coming on, and you're just like, fuck you guys. It's really not cool at all. Yes. So the story is, Leisha is this, and it starts off, and it turns out book one, there's a book one and then book two, you know, and the book one is the original novella, and I got through that and it was okay, and then I started book two and the pacing continued the same. Now, if you're telling a quite complex and long story, like a story that's set over a long period of time in a novella, you've kind of got to skip forward in time quite a bit. You know, this happens and then skip forward and this happens. So the pacing of book one in the overall novel was a little bit too fast-paced for a novel. And as you're reading a novel, you just go, well, we keep skipping forward. And you're like, well, if we keep doing this throughout the whole book, we're going to be, like, super far into the... You know, we're going to be hundreds of years into the future by the time we get to the end of the novel. And these characters will be dead by then. And then, of course, you worked out, oh, they won't be dead because they've actually got these super long lives as well. The pacing, it was just... It's just too fast-paced for a novel, and yet at the same time what is happening is just boring. It's just boring. They just go, oh, well, we're going to do this, what's happening, oh, I'm going to university, great, and now there's this court case, oh, is it, oh, and there's this, oh, great, there's this it just nothing really, not a lot happens. I mean, some stuff does happen, but if you even said, what is the plot of book one in this novel, I'd be like, well, Leisha grows up and is superhuman but persecuted, and she doesn't like that, and she's the one who is against all of this. You know, she's the one, oh, we shouldn't go away to sanctuary. We shouldn't just, you know, if the underachievers, we shouldn't just treat them like beggars in Spain. And that's what all the book comes down to, is these long conversations that they had. Oh, if there were beggars in Spain, what would you do? If you saw a beggar in Spain, would you give them some money? And it's like, okay, here's some money. And what about someone else? If there's another beggar, oh, I'll give them a dollar as well. What about this other beggar? Yeah, okay. Well, how many beggars do there have to be for you not to have to give each one of them a dollar? And it's like, well, we should give everyone... And it's just this... The two sides of the coin is like, either everybody is a beggar except for the sleepless, who are just superhuman libertarian people who don't like charity. Like, it's... The two sides of the coin, it's like, it's not everybody. It's not just the top 1% looking after everybody else in the country, and everybody else is by default a beggar. It's that some people are needy, a lot of people get by, some people are super rich, and if we all band together, we can provide for the people who are super, super needy. But that just doesn't even seem to enter into the brains of the most intelligent people in the world. You just go, if you're the most intelligent people in the world, surely you can understand basic economics, surely you can understand a basic, like, what we'd call a mixed economy, a combination of capitalism, a combination of mixed with socialism. That's what they have in Spain. Why pick Spain out? Why not pick out if you were in Somalia, if you were in anywhere, even if you were in America, has got a worse social system than pretty much any country in Europe. So why is it suddenly Spain? Maybe that's just a point now. Like, is Spain isn't like Mogadishu or wherever in Somalia. Anyway, so I started reading it. Funnily enough, this book was probably the book that sent me to sleep the quickest of any book that I listened to as an audiobook. The irony was that I'd just put it on and fall asleep straight away and then go back and like, reset that chapter and then the next night go and then just fall asleep after 10 minutes. So it was great to get me to sleep. But then again, it really wasn't very much about people not sleeping. So I finished that and then I was on this next bit and I was, and then it suddenly just crashed and the pacing crashed and everything just crashed. And I was like, this is now really boring, you know. And then I worked out, oh, book one is the original novella. So it turns out me giving up about just over a third of the way through this book is not me failing to read a novel. It's actually me succeeding to read a Hugeler novel, novella. Yeah, so I read the novella and I didn't finish the novel because it was just, it gets really pathetic. And I know it's weird to say this, but like these, the people who seem to subscribe to the objectivist thing and write books like this. Again, this was a nominee for the Prometheus Award, and that always goes to, you know, the top objectivist, top libertarian, whatever it goes. Like, oh, we're gonna have I looked it up before, not now, but like before when I taught this book, sort of these books. Oh, we're gonna set up a Hall of Fame Award. Well, what are the first two books to win the Hall of Fame Award? Could you guess? Yes, it's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress and Atlas Shrugged. And it's like, wow. I mean, it's not even mildly subtle what the Prometheus Award is rewarding, even in books where it actually shows that style of government or that kind of political worldview is the problematic one. Just because it mentions that kind of thing and brings more exposure to libertarian ideals and objectivism, that's what it comes to. So, what else was I going to say? I don't think I've got much else to say about this book, except that it is frustrating to read a book which thinks it's about one thing, isn't about that, and then is just like long sections are just preaching about, oh, this. But there are no worthy people in the book who aren't sleepless. It's only the libertarian objectivist Yogyakarta supermen who do anything in the book. Nobody else gets a look in. It's a fake system. This is not reality. And this always comes back to with libertarians and objectivists and people like this, they only think in terms of a utopian society. Like, they take something which isn't human nature. They take things which aren't actually in the real world and then say, oh, but if it was like this, it would work. Yes, if things were actually like they were in public, in fiction. Like, if the public were like they were in fiction, yes, what would happen in this story would happen. But you can't just stack the game. Like, there is free energy, and there is a new race of persecuted superhumans who happen to be fantastically high-achieving. Yes, in that situation, the libertarians might have a point, but we don't live in a world where there's unlimited resources, and we don't live in a world where people are genetically and intrinsically higher achieving than everybody else. It just doesn't work that way. It always comes down to, libertarians are, what is it, temporarily frustrated millionaires or whatever it is. Like, you know, you in your own way, it's your own work, it's your own thing, it's only your own effort which gives you any dignity in life. Turns out that's just not true. Nobody gets by with just their own effort. Everybody stands on the shoulders of giants or stands on the shoulders of other normal people. That's how we progress in life. That's how everybody progresses in life. There is no such thing as a self-made Superman who just happens to have the greatest amount of dignity in the world because they put in the most amount of work and achieve the most on the back of their own success. That just doesn't work. Everybody pitches in for all achievements, even if some people get the credit, it's actually everybody pitching in. So you can't just rig the game and then have your political ideals suddenly win out. They can, in a rigged game, but they can't in the real world. So please just grow up a bit and actually look at people as humans. As humans. So I gave up on this novel after section one. I still have about 10 hours left of the audiobook that I'm not going to get to. I'm not even really interested in what happens. But again, so if I was just reviewing the original novella, I would probably give it 3 stars. If I was reviewing the book as a whole, well, I didn't even complete it. So I think overall I'll give this I'd say 2 stars. I mean, maybe the original novella, 2.5 stars. So I'm just going to bump this down to 2 stars and leave it at that. However, I do think there was actually I don't want to be too negative about it, though, because I think there was an SFF audio podcast recorded about this in which Jesse and some other people were so negative about this that they didn't actually put out the episode at all because they thought it was nothing about ragging on it. So I don't want to say anything bad about the author herself or any of the work. It's just not a very good, like, as a novella, it's okay. As a novel, it's quite disappointing and just not very well paced and a bit boring. The characters, I mean, I haven't hardly even mentioned them. Just not, they're just like, okay, over here we have a super villain and here we have a nice person who likes people who aren't sleepless. You're like, if that is as developed as the characters are going to be. Oh, and the father of her, I actually quite liked him as an interesting character, as someone who sees himself as, like, yes, and I'm a Yagaius, and I am one of these libertarian supermen, but actually seeing him as someone who is a terrible father, who drives his wives to alcoholism, who loses one of his daughters. The daughter drives out, like, one of his daughters pretty much driven out of the home or feels like rejected out of the home. And you're like, okay, that's an interesting tragic story, but it's told from the point of view of the perfect daughter who didn't have anything bad from her father. It's like, so there's not even any bad consequences of that. It's like everything is just whitewashed and things. So the bad characters are whitewashed and the good characters are the good characters who will probably come around to the fact that they're wrong anyway. And yes, we should all just, you know, murder the poor or whatever. Which I wish I was exaggerating, but that kind of is the message that we have here in this book. So, yeah, what else was I going to say? Just read, if you're going to do this, just read the short story. This actually goes on. I think there's another 3 books or something. There's, yeah, Beggars and Choosers and Beggar's Ride. And it's like, well, why name the book? Also the name of the book, Beggars in Spain, not even slightly subtle. It's just at one point it's like, and now we will have a philosophical conversation. And that will be the name of the book. You're like, really? That's like, you can't even be slightly subtle about this. Anyway, so yes, there's another few books. I would say just stick with the original novella and you'll probably enjoy it okay. So that's it from me. Juliana, do you have anything to say?
I like sleeping.
You like sleeping? I like sleeping too. But this book, you missed the start of the podcast. It's not even about that. You know, there isn't even a defense from this people who sleep to say, no, sleep is good because of these reasons. You dream and it makes you feel comfortable, and that waking up in the morning and all the benefits, like all the good stuff about sleeping and relaxing. And they are like, we live in dormitories. Like, all the sleepless, yes, we all live in dormitories and we don't even need a bed. And it's like, the only reason we need a bed is for sex. And you're like, really? Is that the only reason you need a bed? Isn't just laying in bed, like, really nice? Do you lay in bed? Like, when you wake up in the morning, do you not like just laying in bed?
I love laying in bed. We do lie in bed a lot.
Of course, and it's nothing to do with sleep. But even those questions aren't even raised, because in the original novella, there wouldn't have been time for it. There wouldn't have been time in the original novella to talk about all those things, because the story was the most important thing. If you were going to expand that original novella into a novel, you shouldn't have just added another 3 novellas after it, or another 3 short stories afterward and called it a novel. You should have expanded those questions, you know, those experiences of her as a child. Go back and explore those more, and you would have got a lot better book out of it, because otherwise the story isn't there. So yes, I'll wrap it up there. Thanks a lot for listening. Oh no, email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on Goodreads and become my friend, and Juliana's friend, because she made an appearance here as well. On Goodreads, you can join the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads, because we do all the SFBRP community stuff over on Goodreads, just because it's easier than having a forum and all that kind of stuff. I do reply to every email. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge there. I often tweet about fun stuff, and that's about it. Next up, we'll probably get to the second to last book in the Culture series, Hydrogen Sonata by Ian M. Banks. And also, last night I recorded an episode, a podcast episode with Jenny and Scott from the Reading Envy podcast. That'll be coming out next week as well, and I'll drop that in the feed, so it'll come to you automatically. And you can hear me talking about non-science fiction books that I've read recently. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.